let's just accept the jank. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 253. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me is international internet superstar, as you've now been called on the apps by comment section, Peter Wellington.
Hello.
Hello, Peter. You Hi. Are now on my site.
Yes, your site. The site you own.
The site I own with all my monies. as you probably know, as well as doing this stuff for Pocket Gamer and all that, I actually edit appspy.com, which is a primarily video-based review and news site. And today we debuted the first video from Peter.
Yeah.
So your smooth dulcet tones are all over my YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It was genuinely like really exciting to do it. So it's about rhythm action games, isn't it? And
yeah.
And I'd forgotten actually how much I like rhythm action games. I'd forgotten how much I like Dance Dance Revolution as well. And I'm considering going out and buying one of those horrible little plastic mats that end of the PlayStation era.
My sister had that.
Oh.
She got it for the PlayStation. We had a PlayStation in the house, and that was her contribution to the bundle, was the plastic wrap-up mat thing, which was fun. I found it a bit fiddly doing it with your fingers. But granted, I had to capture all the footage for the games, you see. and so I had basically half of these games I'd never played before, and so I had to just download it, boot up level one, and then just play it and record it. So
amazing.
Yeah, which is fine for some of them because I did know how to play these games. Unfortunately, that one, what was the last one? What's it called?
Rhythmix.
Yeah, that's not a game you can just pick up and in 60 seconds. I just skipped the tutorial like a foolhardy idiot and immediately ran into problems when I pressed record because I just played it like a twat. So I had to do a couple of takes on that one, and it still wasn't great. Still, it's nice to have you on board.
Yeah. And the community there seems lovely.
Oh, they're a lovely bunch. They're a great lot. It's one of the nice things about AppSpy. Everyone's very sort of chatty and supportive and stuff. And there's some crossover between AppSpy and Pocket Gamers because we're all part of the same network, the Steel Media Network. You see,
all friends, pals.
Yeah, we all get on. Well, good, but. This isn't an AppSpy podcast. This is a Pocket Gamer podcast. And we're here to talk about pocket gamery things. Things like updates. As our American audience will no doubt know, due to their growing waistlines and sore tummies, it's Thanksgiving. Or it was yesterday. Is it actually Thanksgiving on the Thursday? Or is it Friday? Or is it a whole weekend or what?
Well, what's Black Friday?
Friday.
Sure. But what isn't Black Friday the day after Thanksgiving?
In that case, Thanksgiving is today. So
today is
Thursday for us. If you're listening to this, having downloaded it the moment it appeared, it's Friday, which is why you're all sore and full of turkey and that.
Yeah, we aren't. I'm terrible. We're not very good with the American audiences, are we?
Thanksgiving's not our thing, you know.
It's not, but you know, I didn't know about the scones.
Didn't actually know about that.
Oh, I got some feedback.
Oh, really? Did you ruffle some turkey?
I rate left, right, and centre. Loads of, like, what? Scones, mate, we love them, they said. Thanksgiving, like, it just seems like, a lovely, like, celebration. You get to have some nice food. It's like Christmas part two.
Only with Indians getting smallpox.
Yeah, that's right.
Classic.
Yeah.
I wonder why we have problems with our American audience. No idea, really. Anyway, if you are an American listener or a UK listener or a Scandinavian listener, you can take part in the joy that is the Black Friday sale. Usually this happens, obviously, in the States exclusively, which is where they all run out into the stores and they bludgeon each other to death with machetes to get the last toaster that's been reduced. At least that's what I see on the YouTube videos. Mm. However, when it comes to things like iOS games, you can buy them internationally, and they get reduced on the app stores, all the app stores across the land. So at the moment, the Black Friday sale is running full steam. So if you go onto the podcast story on the site, you'll get a link at the bottom, which will take you straight to our sale page, where we're constantly updating it with all the best offers. And I just, off the top of my head, Spider, The Secret of Bryce Manor, great game there. That's at 69p 99 cents from Capcom. They've reduced the entire Ace Attorney trilogy, HD trilogy, to $2.99 for all three episodes, which is an absolute bargain. Mm-hmm. Rayman Jungle Run, 69p. Symphony of Eternity from Chemco, one of them RPG things. Riptide GP2 at 69p. Basically, loads and loads and loads of stuff, dead cheap. So head on over to that page, and if you fancy picking up a couple of bargains to play while you're digesting, then do that. Other things, games have actually been updated. Junk Jack X has received a Thanksgiving update. It adds a few new things, 4 new IAPs, a whole category of throwable items, which they call toys, which will give you anything from like paper aeroplanes to beach balls and stuff like that. You also get 15 new craftable paints with which you can spruce up your furniture, apparently. And a whole 100 new achievements for you to chase. So even more open-ended fun to be had there. FIFA players, if you're a footy-type person, then you can now get online. They have added the online seasons mode, which lets you take your ultimate team online and compete with other people from around the world. Apparently, they've also added a couple of improvements that make things a little bit easier to switch between the classic and the touch controls, which I had a go at, actually. The touch controls on FIFA 14 were surprisingly quite good. I don't know, do you play the football games much?
The football games?
Yes, you know the football games with the foot.
No, you just used words I have literally no idea.
Well, I thought I was the least football-friendly person.
Oh, dear.
On the podcast. Have I got a contender for that?
So, Dream Team, do you say? Is that what it's called?
Ultimate Team.
Nice enough. I think that's... Has that got anything to do with stickers? I remember something about FIFA and stickers a few years back.
That's a different thing. But you can switch between the classic and touch controls a little bit easier now. You can grab the whole game for free to download it, but if you want to unlock the kind of full game and all the features, I think it's a one-off payment of about £2 or £3, which isn't too bad. It was one of the better uses of the free-to-download system, I thought. The other thing, if you're an Android user, the Humble Android Bundle, which they started recently, I think we're onto the third bundle now, it was originally released as a six-game bundle. They've now added 3 more to it. So if you are willing to pay more than the average price, which is currently like $5.34, I think, or £3.27, you also get, on top of the existing ones, Hundreds, Spider, The Secret of Bryce Manor, the one that's on sale for iOS as well, both of which are really quite good. Hundreds we liked, not as much as I think everyone else did.
Mm.
But Spider's awesome because it comes from the same team who did Waking Mars, that one where you're floating around on a Martian planet, like growing plants and alien life forms. And it's really cool. And Spider's really interesting as well. It's kind of a clever little puzzler. You'll also get Desert Bus.
Oh, gosh.
Which is pretty much what it sounds. It is a realistic, real-time representation of the 8-hour drive from Tusken to Las Vegas.
Mm. It's one of those boring simulator games before they became popular.
Yeah, but in a kind of kitsch way, I assume.
Have you played it?
What, an 8-hour? No, why would I do that?
Have you not played it at all?
Why?
Well, it's sort of part of the cultural zeitgeist, isn't it? They do the Desert Bus Run for charity every year.
But I'm not going to sit there for 8 hours on my phone, pointing down a straight highway.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you'd do that. Why not? Why not? I mean, like... There are some people who spend, like, the latest Farming Simulator came out, and I've got nothing against simulator games. I think some of them are quite fun.
Sims are cool.
But, like, you know, ultimately, you just till in some crops, if you can indeed till crops. But
I think you till earth, just, don't you?
Can you till earth?
You harvest crops.
Okay, there you go. You see, this is how much I play. So, like, you know, you can do all that. Like, why not drive down a completely empty road, like, driving a school bus? That sounds great. That sounds like...
Because it's... massively boring. Yeah. I don't care if it's cool or trendy, but it just sounds crap to me. Like I'm not going to play it just for the sake of the kind of kitsch factor. It just seems dumb.
But it's act like the thing is though that it's like it's not it's not accidentally crap. It's actively crap.
Yeah, but whether it's active or accidental, it's still crap.
Yeah, but like, okay, let's get deep now. this is going to be the same level of debate that we had last week, right?
Is it really?
Like, the punk rock movement in the 1970s and like very late 1960s was all about producing music, producing something, an expression, and producing it whether or not you had the talent, right? Like making something that was kind of deliberately a bit naff. And this is deliberately naff.
It wasn't deliberately naff. Punk music was very, very simple. Simple doesn't mean naff. It was direct and it was pure and it was a message. But this is just driving in a straight line for 8 hours. I'm not going to do that.
No, you've got it wrong. It's not driving in a straight line because the bus veers ever so slightly.
Well, like a supermarket trolley.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all of the fun of a supermarket trolley, but on your I haven't convinced you, have I?
I hope you've unconvinced yourself in the process, if you've any sense to you. Anyway, if you want to get it, you can get it on the Humble Android bundle right now. But there are other games which are probably more fun than that, so get it for that reason. So Mario Kart was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing good. Yeah.
It was amazing good.
Yeah, I put two positives together.
It was wicked cool.
Yeah, it was brilliant awesome.
Smashing fresh. All right. Yes, I agree, Peter Wellington. It was good, wasn't it?
Yes.
And still one of the games I would happily pick up now and plug a SNES in and get mates round and play. It's just infinitely playable. Sort of kicked off the whole kart racer thing, after which followed things like the Crash Bandicoot kart racing games. You had a bunch of Sonic racers as well, a couple of which recently have been quite good, those Sonic Transformed racers. And they actually translate fairly well onto touchscreen devices. The latest people to try their hands at it is perhaps not the studio you would expect. Rovio has released, in New Zealand only at the moment, Angry Birds Go. It's not a game in which you fling birds at pigs. It's a game in which you put a little red bird in a cart and drive them around a racetrack against other birds and that. Basically, it's an Angry Birds kart racer.
Fine. Good.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No, that sounds brilliant. And we sort of thought that this might be what it is, like a sort of single track kind of a thing where you drive down a big thing with your bird in your cart and it's all cartoony and that. And then you win.
Back of the box.
And yeah, exactly. This is why I'm writing about games and not doing PR, because I can just write things like that, get away with it. That sounds brilliant. I don't see any flaw in the plan of bringing out an Angry Birds kart racer. Not a single one, James.
Yes, well, look, I downloaded it because I have access to a New Zealand App Store account.
Ooh, shady.
Oh, I know, very much. And so I downloaded it and had a bit of a play. There's a video up on AppSpy, actually, of the first maybe 10 minutes or so of it. It's really attractive, first of all. It's very good looking. Actually handles quite well too. It's got, you know, loose physics and you're sliding all over the place and it's a bit, you know, madcap and crazy. Plenty of chirpy music. Presentation's top notch. Rovio do that really well. And it's a cracking looking game. It's free to play, which is it the first time Rovio's done that?
Yes, it is the first time Rovio itself. Rovio Stars, they've done Juice Cubes.
Yes, they've had for their little subsidiary publishing house, Rovio Stars, they've released the free-to-play game.
And of course, when the Angry Birds games released on Android, they made them free because
yes, that's right.
LOL Android piracy.
Exactly. That was in their press release, actually.
This is the first game they've decidedly just gone, do you know what? Let's make this free-to-play.
Yeah, which I understand because obviously it's the current trend and everything's going that way. However, they don't have a great deal of experience in this. And having played it for a while, all due respect to them, I kind of think it shows. You have to be very delicate, as we all know, when you're building a free-to-play game to get the balance right, to get the balance between what you will allow players to play for free and when you cut them off and when you start demanding money and how much you demand. Also, the other thing is not to make it too complicated. We're seeing more and more games now where they've got like three different currencies. You've got gold and you've got gems and you've got these big meaty coin medallion things and you can buy items using combinations of all three, and it becomes a right headache to work out which ones you're earning, how much you're going to earn, and how much you should really spend. I feel like it's when they try to obfuscate the truth with too much information, bombard people with information rather than trying to conceal it, and you hide the lie somewhere in the middle of it, and people don't notice. You know? It feels a bit like that. In the case of Angry Birds Go, it's got a lot kind of going on in it. You're stuck on one track initially, racing around. I think you can play another track as well, where you wander around smashing boxes. So there's one race, and there's one bit where you're doing boxes. You complete that first race, get pole position, earn a little bit of currency, start upgrading your car and everything, and you go back to the start screen to play the next race. And there is no next race. You're back on the first race again. So you go, all right then, and you play that again. And you know, get some more coin and maybe upgrade something. Go back and still playing the first race. And so it continues for a bit. Is there
an energy system?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was about to leap to its defense then and say, well, you know, this is a game as a service. Like, this is about Rovio selling a whole bunch of toys. It's about bringing in all of the junk that you've already bought for all the other games, like all the physical merchandise, that kind of stuff. It's about bringing that all in and creating this fun little kart racer out of the Angry Birds franchise and allowing you to use that sort of stuff and unlocking all those goodies. And but now that you've just told me that that there's energy involved, I'm slightly furious. Like, that sounds horrific.
I don't know if it's naivety, or it's difficult with these things to work out whether it is a naivety or a misunderstanding or just like flat out greed. And you can't tell because you're not there in the room with them.
It sounds like they're pushing their luck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It sounds like they went, do you know what? Let's see if people put up with this kind of rubbish.
Yes. Well, I mean, I will affix this with the fact that it is a soft launch. It's out in New Zealand at the moment. Apparently, I think it's appeared in another territory or two, but it's not global yet, I don't think. It might be by tomorrow, I don't know. But in order to get everything in the game, or rather get anything in the game, you need to buy it with the coins. And in order to get the coins, you have to grind a lot. And you're going to be doing that on the same two tracks over and over and over, with very like little differences in the way they do them. The premium currency is gems. They're given to you in very, very small quantities at the end of races, but that's kind of it. In order to do stuff, you need to upgrade your car. That costs coins. You can upgrade the cars themselves, buy new cars. That cost coins, one of which includes a Big Bang Special Edition car, which costs £69.99. So $100 for a virtual car there. But we've seen that before. We've seen that in Real Racing 3. But still, what the hell? Game modes. So you can. There's a Jenga game mode, for example, where you have to like sort of smash bits of wood out of a thing like Jenga, I presume. I haven't tried it. I haven't played it because it costs money and I haven't paid any.
But again, like if you've got like this was kind of where I was going to come in and rush to the defense of it. You know, if you've got the Jenga game, then that's free.
What you mean if you've bought the actual Jenga?
So if you've bought the physical Jenga game that is about this, I went some Christmas shopping the other day, and I went to a toy shop to look for my nephew and my niece, who, by the way, I don't know if you have to deal with this yourself. I'm sure that you will do very soon. But buying for young people,
in three packs.
Buying for buying presents for young people is exceptionally difficult. We were wandering around this toy store, myself and my partner, and we were trying to find stuff for them. But we came across these Angry Birds Go toys that are out already in the UK.
Right,
you can already buy the toys, and like if you take the toys, you can actually scan them into the game itself, and that Jenga game is part of that. So if you buy the, I think it's like £15 or something like that, like an actual physical full-on Jenga toy with the Angry Birds branding on it, right, you get a little code that you can pop into the game, and then you get another mode. And so that was kind of what I was going to make that argument of, well, if you've unlocked all this cool stuff, then you get all this cool stuff back. Like on top of all of that, having an energy system just sounds.
Yeah, I mean, but the way it works at the moment is you get about five races in, and then your bird gets all shagged out, And you either have to pay to get more energy for that bird or switch to another bird. Like they do with the racing games, where you have to move on to a different car while it's repairing.
I know we constantly come back to this, but like I'm cool with free to play. Like I'm okay with all of this sort of stuff, and like I'm okay with energy systems, and I'm okay with paying for additional content. But what I'm not okay with is paying for both, because at some level, if I've paid money for something and then the game goes, oh thanks very much for that. Oh, did you want to play with it? Oh, no. You'll have to pay us again if you want to play with that stuff you've already paid for. Like, that makes me blood red mad. And, like, I can't personally be dealing with that sort of thing. So I'm glad that it is in soft launch, to put a positive spin on it, because I would not want to play that game.
No, well, they do have a chance. Rovio does have a chance to make adjustments if the kickback is negative. But I can't imagine that the people who are going to be really enjoying playing this, perhaps young kids, majority, are going to kick up that much of a fuss. Like, if it was aimed at a hardcore gaming audience, they tend to react very negatively to this sort of thing, like the Real Racing switchover, because Real Racing had a very hardcore fan base. Sure. We were happy to pay a £5, you know, $10 or something for a racing game and play it properly. So when they introduced the energy system into Real Racing 3, there was a huge uproar from kind of hardcore traditional gamers. Angry Birds isn't that game. It's not that kind of property. And this kind of kart race, so it's very fun and it's very upbeat and lively and colourful and it's got lots of whizzes and bangs and funny noises and it's clearly aimed at a kind of youngish audience. And I don't see them like getting together a little union and rallying against the energy bar in this. So I could imagine it just staying.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if they can get away with it.
As sort of competent and successful as Rovio are, I would say this is their first attempt at a freemium thing. So I imagine this is going to be where they stumble and make a bunch of mistakes, and then they can perhaps pick themselves up and learn from it and do things differently next time. Maybe.
Yeah.
That's the generous assessment
but,
of it.
But it would have been good to maybe not associate the Angry Birds brand with it. Like, if that's where you're going to do your experiments and that's where you're going to make your learnings, maybe don't poison the Angry Birds brand at the same time by doing it. Like, maybe do it with the new IP first.
Do it with Bad Piggies.
Do it with Bad Piggies. Who cares about those Bad Piggies?
Some people still play that. I had someone talking to me on Twitter today saying it was their favourite Rovio game and they're still playing it.
It's a good game.
It's all right.
It's got loads and loads of replay and longevity and it's, you know, beautifully designed. And, yeah, I think it was the best step those guys ever made after the first Angry Birds. But
oh well, we'll let you know when Angry Birds goes full on launch worldwide and keep you updated, and we'll have to keep an eye on it and see whether they make any tweaks and that energy system vanishes in a puff of feathers. We shall see. However, there is something else you can look forward to, which is going to be coming out next month. It was announced this week by Rockstar that GTA San Andreas is coming to iOS and Android, I think, but I haven't checked the dates on this. I assume San Andreas would be coming out on the 10-year anniversary like the other two have. Has it been 10 years since San Andreas, or has it only been like 9?
It has been
nice.
It has been, it was released in 2000, off the top of my head, it was released in 2004.
Oh.
And October, so it would have to be very late next year.
Yeah,
all right. Then. So I imagine kind of just before that.
They're jumping to it, all right. Then.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Either way, it is now penciled in for December. We haven't got an actual date yet, but we know it's coming next month. It'll have spruced up sexy new graphics like the other two did. And it'll have the new control scheme as well. I think they've added even more options to it this time. So you have more alternatives, like 3 different alternatives for your driving setup. Because some people like the kind of binary buttons, arrow buttons. Some people like to slide left and right. And some people probably like to just, I don't know, bounce their iPhone off the walls and see what happens. I don't know. Either way, it's coming. Are we excited?
Now that those controllers are out, yes.
Yes, that is the other thing. It is going to be compatible with them controllers that we talked about last week. Listen to last week's podcast if you haven't already. Which is, I suppose, a reason for excitement if it actually works properly with the controllers.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that hardware's out now and they've got time to tweak it and do all that good stuff. There's a writer chap, works for PG every so often, a guy called Damian McFerrin. Who's a bit of an Android fanboy, really.
And, yes, he does like the Android, doesn't he?
And he was saying that Grand Theft Auto, those two Grand Theft Auto games, were really good with like a 360 controller.
Yeah, I bet they were.
On Android devices. So that's what put me off Vice City, and that's what put me off the original GTA 3. Like, those control schemes really just don't work. But San Andreas is absolutely my favourite entry in the series. I haven't played 5 yet, but like, San Andreas is fantastic. And the fact that like they've added new checkpoints in, so it's like not as like stupidly difficult as the original release.
Which does make sense. I mean, you haven't played 5. I've played 5, and that's a thing from the 5th game. Yes. They checkpoint throughout missions now, rather than just taking you all the way back to the car journey at the beginning. God.
Did you ever get to the end of San Andreas?
Did I?
It was after
I didn't.
As a riot.
I lost interest in San Andreas. I really did. It was too big. And I wasn't so keen on the 90s sort of gangbanger setting.
I love that.
CJ and co. didn't really do anything for me.
No, I absolutely love that. And I'm a fan of the hip hop, and the hippity hop. And that was perfect for me. Like I fell in love with that game when I first heard the Rage Against the Machine track that's included on it. And
I was listening to Rage this week for some reason. I busted out the first album for some reason. Don't know.
They were a good band.
Yes, they were, Peter.
And apparently they've got a new album coming out in like next year. Apparently.
Is Zach De La Rocha still angry?
He's furious.
Constantly.
Capitalism still awful.
I know, isn't it? I put it on, and like this is probably the first time my girlfriend had actually heard the band at all. She's she's Colombian, so she didn't grow up around these parts. And Rage, I don't think Rage translated. But she was just like, "Who? What's this?" When it gets to the end of whichever track it is, and he's going, "All of which are American dreams. All of which are." And she's just like looking at me like, "What's the matter with you?
What? Calm down."
I know, it's like, come on, he's an angry man.
That song right at the end where he's doing that, he says all of which are American dreams about two times too many.
Yeah, I know. It just starts to get a bit awkward.
You can almost hear Rick Rubin in the studio going, "All right, wrap it up, Zach. Wrap it up. No more. No."
I think that's the point. He's hammering it home. Then it goes into Wake Up and everything's okay again.
And you're fine. So San Andreas.
Yes,
really excited for this, and as long as the like controllers work with it, and that checkpointing rectifies that terrible last mission.
It's weird. I felt it was not as focused as the other games, and as a result, felt a little bit like
loose
and flabby.
Like Saints Row is based on this, if you know what I mean. Like it's the start of the open world. Let's just accept the jank. Kind of stuff. You know, like let's accept that open world games are a bit buggy and a bit strange and you want to do stupid stuff in it kind of games. Like this is the first Grand Theft Auto where you can run around and it's legitimately fun to make trouble for the establishment. Like the first two, it just gets really hard really quickly, but this one is like, you know, you'll go from running around with a rocket launcher and causing mischief, and then jumping in a car, driving off, and then tanks turn up, and then jumping into a plane, and then like plane explodes, you parachute out, jump into a boat. It's brilliant. Like it's very, very seamless. But
all right, well, fair enough. You can enjoy that sometime next month, not quite sure when, but we'll let you know as soon as we have a solid date. Last thing I want to talk about before we deal with the new releases is Assassin's Creed Pirates.
Okay.
As tempting as it is to break into a piratey accent, I'm not going to do that because I have too much respect for you. I'm talking to the listeners, not
yes,
you, Peter.
No, not for me. No, no.
Yeah, I've played it. Ubisoft sent out a little preview copy to me and a couple other people. And there's a video up again on AppSpy. There's also one up on Pocket Gamer, so you can see me and Mark and contrasting views. Actually, I think we probably have a similar perspective on the whole thing, I imagine. So it is not a case of taking control of a pirate and then running around cities, climbing walls and jumping off of things and doing Assassin's Creed type stuff. It's something completely different. It's basically a kind of naval combat simulator. Again, it's been difficult this week because I've played these two sort of big name games in preview and I don't want to say nasty things, but at the same time, I'm a bit about the both of them.
Okay. So say I'm a big fan of the Assassin's Creed series, which I absolutely am.
Okay.
And
even the future stuff, even the Desmond storyline.
Oh, he can sod off, but like the old stuff is fine. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I want a mobile version. I don't want to play that silly card game. I don't want to play that top-down multiplayer version of the whatever the heck it was. I don't want to play any of those. Right. I want to play something else, and I want to play it in the Assassin's Creed 4-ish timeline.
Yep.
Is this the kind of game that would cater to me without having to change much about what I am interested in? Does it have any aspects of the actual Assassin's Creed universe within it, or is it a completely different kind of a game?
No.
Right.
It doesn't really have anything that would distinguish it as an Assassin's Creed game. To be quite honest with you, it puts you in control of the ship, so you get a camera perspective as if you're standing on the... I would say the dock of the bay, but that's a song.
You mean on the bridge?
As if you're standing on the bridge of the ship.
you aren't very good with boats, are you?
All words, apparently. So you're standing on the bridge of your ship, looking down the port or the stern or the starboard or whatever, forward.
Oh, fucking hell.
Brilliant pirate. So you're standing on your ship, looking down the barrel of the ship. you sail along a bit. You kind of hold a button down to sail forward, and you steer left and right. And then occasionally an enemy appears on the horizon. You're like, attack, so head for him, tap on him. And then you go into this kind of combat mini game in which you suddenly the camera swings around and you're looking at your cannons parked on the side of the ship. And you have to place your finger on the screen and a big swooping arrow appears. And you have to drag it left and right so you can target the ship. You'll have to anticipate the ship's movements because it'll take a little while for those cannonballs to hit the ship at the other end. And then you kind of drift it along and then you release your finger and boom, you fire at it. And then a couple of rounds and it'll take the ship down. That's great. And then booty for you, because you get to go and pick up booty that's scattered on the surface. There is a plot that's being told throughout via these little pop-up cutscene things, which is all just like still frame images of pirates talking to one another via text box. There's no actual talking or anything. And you collect ships and you upgrade your ship and you sail around a bit. And there are some odd, like, top-down, not even isometric, just flat-out 2D top-down bits where there's like a ship sailing round and round an island and you have to avoid it. So you draw a little path along as if you're playing that that plane game, which I can't remember now.
Oh, Flight Path. Or
yeah, as if you're playing Flight Path. You wait for the opportune moment and then you draw a little line on the screen and your ship goes whoosh, whoosh, and zooms past, which is odd. But as a whole, it feels like it's comprised of these three or four different mini games that you repeat over and over and over again. And none of them on their own are engaging enough to flesh out the full game and cobble them all together, and it doesn't really add up to a great deal. It looks all right. They've got it looking fairly.
Yeah, I think that's an understatement. I think it looks gorgeous.
Well,
the water is amazing.
It is a good looking game, and it runs pretty well. I mean, I'm doing stuff on an iPod Touch now, iPod Touch 5th gen, so that's not current. The iPhone 5S is like at least twice as fast.
It's like lightning, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's quick.
But it runs well. I'm surprised how well it runs, given that it does look as good as it does. But if you are an Assassin's Creed fan and you're looking for the Assassin's Creed fix on mobile, this ain't it. This is an entirely other game with the Assassin's Creed name bunged on it.
So would you recommend it for people trying to find out a bit more about the events surrounding Black Flag?
Well, I couldn't say because I haven't played Black Flag.
Well, does it have much in the way of, like, is there a big story here?
No. No, there's just a little pop-up text story, and you're playing as Alonso Batilla, I think his name is. Just some random ragamuffin pirate dude who's running around trying to upgrade things. Again, this is a soft launch preview thing, so it's not in its complete state, and things may change, so this isn't a final assessment of the game. Caveat, caveat, caveat. But I know I can't say I'm that engaged, and I do like Assassin's Creed, bits of it anyway. I certainly like the second game. I'm pleased that they didn't just try and bung Assassin's Creed on the phone, because that wouldn't work.
Yeah, because last time they did that, it was naff.
Yeah, it would be utterly rubbish. So I completely understand, and I approve of the fact they went, no, we'll do a game that's specifically designed to take advantage of the touchscreen, and it isn't going to try and be some hackneyed Assassin's Creed ripoff where you can't even get them to walk forwards properly because of the naff controls. So. Correct choice, I think. You know, kudos to Ubisoft for doing that. The end result, the game itself, it didn't have Assassin's Creed written on the title screen.
Mm.
But you're going to play it, aren't you? You're going to play Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't wait. I can't wait to play Assassin's Creed 4. Like, have you seen the waves in it? The waves look amazing. Like, we talked about this months and months and months ago now, probably actually at the start of the year. But I am a complete sucker when it comes to water in games. I will play a video game if it looks like the water's good in it. One of my favourite games is like a Ski-Doo simulator on the PS2.
So do you like Riptide 2 then?
Love Riptide.
That's got nice water. Play Grand Theft Auto 5. Like, I think I said this on the podcast before, but it's got really good water.
Good water.
It's dead nice, especially in your man's swimming pool.
He's got a swimming pool.
Yeah, one of the characters has a swimming pool. I always forget their name. It's like Francis has a swimming pool, and it's got lovely water. I hop in it fully clothed every so often and just swim about a bit. Yeah, really good. Yeah, that's very good. About this week is not a great deal because I assume because of the American Thanksgiving thing, a lot of developers have kind of decided we're not going to release games this week because we're all going to be eating and no one's going to be paying attention, yada yada yada, and we'll probably save some stuff up for Christmas too. So not a huge amount, but surprisingly there are a few sort of biggish releases that did appear, one of which is Skulls of the Shogun, which you may have heard of if you have a Windows device, specifically Windows 8. If you've got one of them RT tablets or something, then you may have played this. It is a mixture of turn-based and real-time strategy, I think, but mostly turn-based. It is set in a kind of afterlife where you take control of a shogun who's dead, and him and his dead army are kind of storming their way across the underworld, trying to kick the crap out of various demons and whatnot. What it does, from what I hear, Harry reviewed it last year, I think, when it came out on Windows 8. It manages a very neat trick of being able to be accessible to people who perhaps aren't quite so familiar with the genre, not strategy hardcore types, but then gets very deep as it progresses. So it manages to kind of allow people to come in if they're not familiar, but also it scratches the itch if you are a serious hardcore fan. I haven't played it yet. I don't have a Windows device, but I'm going to be playing it for AppSpy. And I'm quite looking forward to it, because when I did my research and looked back, the notes, the reviews have been fantastic. And everyone seems to acknowledge it as one of the best strategy releases of last year. So I'm kind of interested. I dabble in strategy. I don't seek it out, but then I play one and I get kind of hooked into it, like accidentally for hours.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. It's like maybe every 5 years, like there's a strategy game where I think to myself, I like this kind of thing.
Mm.
And then I forget all about it. Like, like Age of Empires 2.
Yeah.
And like Civ Rev, and there was a game called something, I think it was called something like Corsairs or something like that on the PC a while back, and it was about being a pirate in like Bermuda, right. And it was all about like pillaging stuff, and that was good as well. But like that's literally it. Like it's like every once in a while, because I just kind of think like they're all this. I know it's not true, but they all feel exactly the same.
You're about to make that terrible sweeping accusation. That they're all the same.
Civ feels to me like Age of Empires feels exactly the same as like Command and Conquer and Total Annihilation and like all of those games, and I just kind of think to myself like.
My problem is I don't have the Napoleon complex that other people seem to have. I don't want to be the general god in the sky commanding thousands of troops. That doesn't do it for me. That doesn't really get me off.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've just got Civ 5, right?
Yeah.
And like I haven't started playing it because who's got the time to play that? But like when I do, I'm going to totally try and win every single one through peace. Like, I don't want to fight anyone. I don't want anyone to die. Like, I feel personally responsible if I ever have soldiers and they end up dying.
You're going to be the czar in charge of hugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hugs are.
Hugs are.
That's right. Hugs are. Hugs are.
Russia be a lovely place?
my first decree will be that what's the best kind of hug that would sort of like bring one, about world peace?
One which ends with full sex.
Well, all right. I mean,
it'll be an exhausting position, I grant you. Especially if there are a lot of people with grievances. But I think ultimately rewarding.
Ultimately very rewarding. Yeah, okay.
For everyone involved.
Yes. All right, then. All right, good. Well,
And that's why you should buy Skulls of the Shogun. out on iOS right now.
I love the fact that we can just about get through any release that we don't know anything about.
Yes. By talking about hug sex. Well, whatever. I think it's out for a couple of quid now. But yeah, all reviews say good. We've got a review up for the original version on the site, and there'll be one video appearing on AppSpy very soon, so check it out. Also out this week, it technically came out last week, again, in a soft launch. It came out in New Zealand or Canada or something. One of them other countries where they have high quality of life. Bastards. Galaxy on Fire Alliances, which is not the space-faring shoot-em-up sequel that you might expect from the Galaxy on Fire franchise. It is the strategy social game in which you team up with a bunch of other alien types online and try and conquer the other factions. There's three factions you can choose from, and you team up with your buddies, and you start off on your own home base, and you mine resources, and you hit buttons, and timers appear, and those timers tick down, and then when they've ticked down, you have a thing. And then you tap another bit on the map and a timer appears, and then that ticks down. And you flick through a couple of Windows browsers, look at a YouTube video of a cat. Yep. And then it goes bing, and then you tap another thing. That's been my experience with it so far anyway. And so on and so on. Except it's set in the Galaxy on Fire universe. It looks really, really impressive. And it's got all this social stuff going on too. When I played it, there wasn't many people involved in it. So I haven't given it full testing with all the social features. So I can't really comment. Reaction on the channel has been quite funny, with most people going, "What? This isn't Galaxy on Fire. Where's the spaceship? Oh, shoot the lasers!" People have got a bit cross. I'm going to carry on playing and try and engage some people online and get in some massive intergalactic conflict over something small.
Sure.
Like the third moon of Orion or something. But yeah, you can play it now. It's free to play, obviously, as you might have imagined from them little timers. And you can grab it right now if you want to. There you are. Go for it. Why not? Oh, Keith's not here, as you might have noticed. We should address the in the room that isn't in the room in this case.
You might have noticed that the level of professionalism has gone up.
Gone up significantly.
Dramatically.
And yes. The number of cock gags have decreased.
Yeah, that is the one downside, clearly.
Yeah, that's true. I got to pick it up. Hey, Peter.
Go on.
Penises.
Oh, you.
Yeah, I know. That's fair. Quotient filled. Yeah, he's heading off to Games Connection in France in the next couple of days. So he's doing preparations for that, which I don't know what that is. He's probably, packing bourbon biscuits into a bag.
Oh, yeah.
Until there's no more room for any other bourbon biscuits.
I mean, is Games Connection, is that in the UK?
No, it's France. It's Paris.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Yes, yes. Well, we'll definitely then. Definitely taking, packing some good biscuits, maybe some good tea.
Yeah.
I mean, you need days, really, to pack for those kind of events. So
I think I just blagged it. I went last year, and I'm pretty sure ever since I extended my passport and went on a few of these trips, I realized that, you know, travel light, move fast.
Yeah.
So, toothbrush and phone and laptop and a towel in a very Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
No. Combine the scarf with the towel.
But no, the towel acts as a scarf. That's the whole thing.
Oh.
The towel is multifunctional. That's why you bring it with you everywhere, because it cleans and it shelters and it lassoes and it just does everything. That's why the towel is indispensable.
This is a reference to something, isn't it?
Read Hitchhiker. You've read Hitchhiker's Guide. Come on. Have you? Haven't you?
I don't think I've read it, no. I think I watched the movie of it.
Oh, don't watch the movie.
Oh, and I've listened to the audiobook.
Oh, that's not so bad. Okay. But the novels are phenomenal. They're they're originally radio plays, but they turned into novels. And that was basically my Bible when I was about between the ages of 8 and 10 or something. I just read the whole five books over and over again. Hang on, where did we get to from here? What's this got to do with this?
Galaxy on Fire.
Oh, yeah, towels.
Towels, yes. Yep.
Keith isn't here because he's got a towel. But if he was here, he would be getting very excited about the fact that Icicle on Thin Ice has just been released, which is the game he was talking about playing last week. A very, very pretty, arty-looking platformer in which you take control of a nude man on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
Who's traveling across these single screen levels. I mean, it's all kind of one big level, but it goes in, he goes in at one screen and out the other end, and then it switches to a new screen. Like them old games like Manic Miner and stuff that you had on the Spectrum. Yeah. And it looks really, really, really pretty. We've given it a silver award. It seems to draw lots of inspiration from famous paintings. You know that painting of the guy in the bowler hat with the apple over his face that you see in the Thomas Crown Affair and various other movies?
Yeah.
In case you haven't visited a museum. Yes. I have to translate it into a pop culture references rather than assuming people have seen the painting for real.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, there's a level kind of based around that where you've got apples everywhere, and the guy on the bicycle gets a bowler hat for that particular level, and other ones that are, you know, loosely inspired by art and stuff. The main draw of the whole thing is it's very imaginative, seems to be very creative, and it's also got this kind of peculiar British sense of humour where it feels like it's drawn inspiration also from Monty Python, things like that. You can almost imagine a big foot coming down at the end and squashing you on a little bike, which is very cool. You can get it right now. It's a clever little mix of ideas. Harry's reviewing it says some stuff can be a bit on the cruel side, so chunks of ice will fall on you suddenly and there's not a great deal you could have done about it. But generally speaking, entertaining, gorgeous platformer, he says, smart as it is fun. You can get that right now. I think it is, I'm going to say it's about £1.99, something like that. Maybe 69p. I don't know. Find out for yourself. I can't do all the work around here.
Oh, this is made by the same people who made Wonder Putt.
Yes.
Oh, delightful.
Oh,
okay.
Liked.
Brilliant. Might get that now.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Another thing before we go is The Inner World, which was a PC point-and-click adventure done in a very cartoony style. The foreground, very block colour, very almost crude drawings.
Oh, yeah.
But the background sort of a little bit more richly detailed. It got reasonably good ratings on the PC. People liked it. It's a very inventive world. You take control of, like, a guy who is the musician in a monastic order, I think. But it's very surreal, so he has a flute for a nose, basically. So the creatures are all very unusual and bizarre, and apparently the air supply has just been cut off to the monastery and the whole world, and it's controlled by these three fans, which you must then go and try to reactivate with your buddy Laura, who's some kind of Apollosian thief. So apparently it's quite good fun, silly little story, not as good looking as it could be in some places, but interesting nonetheless.
The guy who was showing it to me in Kiev,
because
I saw it and wrote up a little preview of it, was one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
At this time, had you been appointed as the Hugzar?
No.
So you missed
wasn't
out.
No, but he wasn't even looking sort of butting me up as the Hugzar. He was like, oh, look at my game, it's well good. And and I looked at it and I said, oh, it looks a little bit sort of like a 2D Grim Fandango. And like he stopped showing me the game and he looked at me and he was just like, that is exactly what it is. It was just like, yay, like I've totally understood what you've gone for here.
Oh, good.
It's brilliant. Like it's really funny as well. And the puzzles make like all sorts of sense. Like, you know the new Broken Sword kind of input method of like putting your finger on the screen, it'll kind of show you where stuff is within a proximity. It kind of does that, and then like, and it makes the puzzles a little bit easier, and it's not just all about combining this with this.
Okay.
It's a little bit like the Broken Sword Director's Cut edition, where they added like proper puzzles, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Brilliant.
That's quite a recommendation. Well, you can get it right now, The Inner World. It's £1.99 or $2.99. Come sit upon my throne of games. Here we are again in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. Just the two of us this week. It's a bit echoey, but don't worry, we'll get through. A bit warmer than last time, luckily. Have you noticed it's warmed up a little bit?
Yeah, it's almost muggy.
We've had this mad cold snap in Britain, guys. And it's been kind of rough, but now it's suddenly got a bit warm.
Oh, do you mean in real life? Yeah. No, it's
well, this is I assume the chamber is located in medieval Britain.
Oh yeah, of course. It's been so cold.
Yeah, this is what it's come down to, us bitching about the weather. We are fulfilling every British stereotype right now.
I've been warming my feet on my hot water bottle, which a friend of mine bought me for my birthday this year, and it's got a picture of his face on it.
That is so sexy.
Isn't it good? But it's so cold.
Yeah, but it's chilled out a bit now, so we can sit on the throne without getting that ice thing where you stick to it, which is really horrible and awkward and not nice to clean up either. So I'm going to sit on it first, and I'm going to talk about Mickey Mouse. Specifically, Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse, to give it its full title, which I thought was kind of an addendum title, a way they've used to separate it from the original Castle of Illusion. Until I went back and looked at the box art of Castle of Illusion, which was released back in 1990. 23 years ago!
Oh, don't.
Yeah, I know. And it is actually called Castle of Illusion, and then underneath, small text, starring Mickey Mouse. So it technically always was the full title. So there you go. A little bit of a crap trivia there. Right, so what they did is, earlier on in the year, they released a kind of reimagining of the game for consoles. You could download it on Xbox Live and PSN. So it wasn't a direct remake of the levels, but each of the levels have been inspired, you know, based upon the levels from that original 2D platforming game that was on the Mega Drive, or the Sega Genesis, if you come from across the pond. It is loosely the same thing. So it's still a 2D platformer. Let's say 75% of the game is a 2D platformer. It's been turned into 3D, visually speaking. So the graphics, you've got 3D Mickey, 3D environments, that 2.5D thing where you kind of scroll sideways, left and right. Occasionally you'll take right turns and, you know, you move around. The camera will pan over a little bit and you go down a slightly different avenue. So it kind of highlights the fact that, oh, it's in a 3D world now. And there are bits where it goes kind of properly 3D platformer, like something like Mario 64, where the camera will suddenly go to behind Mickey, like over the top of his head, and you'll be able to roam around in all directions, not just 2D. So it's kind of a merging of the two different styles, 2D and 3D platforming. Visually speaking, they've done a very nice job of recreating the atmosphere of that first game, which has become a bit of a classic. It's not as pretty as the console versions, obviously. They've had to tone down the textures and whatnot, but it still gives you a really nice sense of the world. And Disney are quite good at creating these worlds. Whether you think it's too sweet and too saccharine and all that stuff, which is fair enough because most of it is, they're very, very well realized. They're kind of complete environments, and they've got a distinct personality to each of the different worlds. And they do that very well. And they've done it well here, in all credit to them. The gameplay is very streamlined, I suppose, because just like the original platformer, it's just like left and right and jump. You do also have a button that allows you to throw objects, normally apples, but sometimes marbles or something like that. It handles okay. Not great.
That doesn't sound like a sterling recommendation.
Yeah, I know, but it is a game that has been designed for controllers and has been ported onto iOS. Ultimately, that's what it is, and you can tell, as you mostly can tell when these things happen. It's perfectly fine, and it's important the controls work, because this is a platformer, not a super precision platformer like something like League of Evil, but it still requires a fairly high level of precision, and the original Castle of Illusion got pretty tough. It was known as being a pretty hardcore platformer in the end. So you can make your way around it, and sometimes there are smooth patches where I go through and I'm like, yeah, I've got a handle on this, I've mastered this, this is great. And then there'll be stuff where you fall off a ledge when you really feel like you probably shouldn't have, because you were trying to turn around by making a tiny micro adjustment with your finger and it translates into this big clumsy lunge. And you're like, oh, that's not so good. I think if I had a controller, that probably wouldn't have happened. So there are a few things like that. The other thing is the action button. So the button you use to throw objects is teeny tiny. Like, so small. So small. Ridiculously so, to the point where you're trying to hit it and you just end up jumping, trying to hit this tiny little button. Which seems daft. Like, why didn't they make that bigger? But whatever, it works. It doesn't completely ruin the game, and you can still play through and you can still complete it. It's, you know, it doesn't stop you playing it, but it ain't ideal, if we're honest. The levels themselves comprise of these three acts, where you've got two kind of mini levels and then a boss. They're pretty short. You can play through the whole thing in a couple of hours, few hours, so it's not a great long game. And it is relatively dear. It's like a fiver. So it's $4.99 or what, $8.99, I suspect that translates to. So it's quite expensive for an iOS game, but production values are very high, and if you bought it online, it would cost, for the console, for example, it would cost even more. So, you know, you're making a saving in some, to some degree. And the levels are entertaining to play through. The bosses feel a bit cheap at times, and I don't know whether that's because of the lackluster controls on the iOS version making things harder, but you basically watch them do their pattern, whatever the pattern is. For example, the tree, he just rolls once across the screen and then he rolls back, so you jump both times, and then some acorns fall down and then you jump on his head. And you just kind of repeat that 4 or 5 times, and that's it. And then the same thing with the next boss. There's a watery boss, and you wait for them to all come at you, and they roll a couple of times, and then they knock themselves out, and then you jump on their head, and you repeat. And they feel a little less than inspired. They feel a bit token, like they've bunged it in at the end. It's perfectly enjoyable to play. It's not a horrible game. You know, I just reviewed it for AppSpy, and you know, it's kind of a 7 out of 10, 7.5 maybe, because production values are high. It is fun to play through. The worlds are beautifully created, but it is let down by the fact that the controls don't feel as tight as they should be, and the bosses aren't as engaging as the rest of the game, perhaps. By no means a crushing disappointment or anything, but it's not the glorious return to form. There's always a bit of a danger when you try and recapture that past glory, I think.
You're toying with people. If we were to try and remake Super Mario Brothers, like everybody knows how the Super Mario Brother, everyone knows how Mario should jump.
Yes. Don't they?
So if you get that wrong, like you've screwed it up immediately. Like, well, and you're toying with this kind of, oh, I remember that game from my childhood. Like,
well, that's what Nintendo did recently with the sequel to Link to the Past, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A Link Between Worlds, where they flat out made a sequel to one of the most beloved games in history. And that was ballsy. That was I felt like a real gamble, but has apparently paid off, and apparently it's great.
It pays off and it is great, but it is not, it's not a patch on the original. Like,
okay.
It's really hard to go back to these games because ultimately everybody kind of has this idea as to how they did play.
Yes.
And actually, a lot of those games don't play that well today. Like, if you go back to Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse on the Mega Drive or the Master System, you know, they are punishing. Like,
yeah, seriously.
Like, seriously hardcore games that do, like, that kind of stuff does not fly today. Yes, I think you're absolutely right. You're sort of you're toying with people's emotions, you're gambling with a franchise, essentially.
Yeah, and it's in the case of the Castle of Illusion, it's not a total failure or anything, and there is certainly nostalgia value in jumping through, and I got kind of like the occasional warm, fuzzy feeling. I'm like, oh, it just takes me back. But it's not, they haven't knocked it out of the park either, and it's quite an expensive thing for something that's just like kind of either way, you can get it right now. It's, I think it's £5 or about $8-9, something like that. Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse. Right, Peter Wellington, what have you been playing this week? Hop up on the throne.
Oh, there we are. Touchgrind Skate 2.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, this is dangerous.
So I said on the last podcast that I was like, oh, I'm quite tempted, but maybe I shouldn't get Touchgrind Skate 2 because the last skateboarding game I got slightly addicted to.
Yes, and we agreed with you and said you
and
should.
And we all said, oh, let's not do it. And I said, oh, that's fine. And then the developer sent me a code for it. And I said, oh, no. And then I started playing it. I'm glad I didn't review it because I probably would have been fired for giving it 11 out of 10.
For giving it impossible out of 10.
That's right. Because I am so absolutely smitten with it. It is crushingly, brutally hardcore skating. It really is. It is the difference between Tony Hawk's and the Skate series.
Yeah.
To kind of explain why it's that difficult, you place two fingers on the screen on the board, and to do an ollie, which is a jump if you're not down with the kids. So say, for example, your middle finger is at the top of the board, let's say, and your first finger on your, this is your right hand I'm talking about, is on the back of the board. So you've got your middle finger and you raise your middle finger, and then you raise your first finger, and then the board jumps. That's just to do a jump. You don't get points for a jump.
No.
To do a kick flip, you would want to slide your middle finger back and then bring your first finger up. So Oh, it's really hard to explain.
We're already lost. This is the problem. The tutorials in the game, I've played this, tutorials in the game are visual tutorials. They have to physically show you using dots on the board. This is what you have to do, because trying to explain it in text form is like trying to read the instruction manual for an IKEA bed in another language.
Yeah, it's really tough. But once you get it, once you understand the principle, it's a very flexible control system that actually lets you do quite a lot of stuff. And the deeper you go with it, the more time you spend with it. And I must have spent, I don't even want to say, I've spent an ungodly number of hours playing it, like here and there. And worst of all, one of the editors at Pocket Gamer has got me writing a feature about it. So I have to play it now. I have to play it even more. But yeah, once you understand this control system, it allows you to do all sorts of things. And because it's so difficult to even do a jump or even really turn the board,
it is a pain.
Once you have that system down, you feel so empowered and you feel like you can do anything. Currently, it's got 3 skate parks, which are just filled with objects to trick off of. It's a very realistic game, so it's a very realistic environment. You know, it's not the Tony Hawk's, grind on this thing and it will cause an earthquake like in Tony Hawk's 3. You know, it's not even as fantastical as Skate 3 got with some of its geometry. It's very down to earth. It's fun boxes jumping, that you're jumping off of. It's specifically set out grind rails. You know, it's very skate park-esque in that way. And you have to be very clever and really think about how you maneuver around the environment and how you might set a line up. And you need to practice that line over and over and over again. And I think the kind of people that would get turned off by this are the kind of people who don't want to spend the 25, 30 minutes that it's going to take you to learn all of this sort of stuff and actually become sort of one with the board, if you know what I mean. Like I can do these tricks now. Like I could do it right now while I'm talking to you. It is so ingrained into my fingers.
It is all muscle memory,
yeah. But with that, once you have practiced and practiced and practiced these lines, you feel so happy about it. You know, you feel like you've accomplished something nobody else has done. You know, you've beaten the game. You figured it out. You know, you now know how to do an ollie to a dark slide to a kickflip out,
I could do that. I just don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. But, and here's the cool thing, and this is where I would be able to say to you, well, if you can do that, then you can show me, because there's a replay function in there whereby it will record everything that you're doing. I think there's a fair few minutes that you can record for, and then you can take that footage and you can edit it ever so slightly. This aspect of it isn't as fantastic as I would want it to have been, but you can figure, you can set a start point, you can set an end point, and then, change a camera angle or two, and then upload it to YouTube or to Facebook. So you can brag about what you've been doing. And that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been uploading all of my awesome rad tricks to YouTube. And no one's watching them. Like, no one cares.
I haven't watched them.
but it's saved. You know, it's saved for posterity.
For future generations to ponder over.
For when the human race is obliterated from this planet, and they find the data centers intact, they will find on YouTube my amazing dark slide to double kickflip that
I'll say these humans, they had a strange preoccupation with fake wooden boards with wheels on the bottom and cats.
Peter Willington appears to have been a rad dude. They will say,
let the history books state.
But because I'm putting it out there, suddenly now I'm thinking, well, I can do better than that. Like, I've got to do better than my next trick. I've got to find the next thing. I landed that line ever so slightly sketchily. I've got to make that perfect now. And it's this thing of trying to improve and improve and improve. And it's what the best skateboarding games do. And that's, it's not about fulfilling objectives and getting high scores and all that sort of stuff. There certainly is that within the game. But actually, it's about you. It's about your board. And it's about the skill that you have. And it's about improving and setting your own goals and your own challenges.
Yeah.
And for me, that challenge is, I want to be able to do a quad kickflip. I still can't do it. And I think it's possible. I just need to find the right location in the game to do it. And just blitz it. Just perfect it. Just get it down. I think it's possible. But I can't do it yet. And it keeps me up at night. Like, I spent 45 minutes of my weekend trying to do a quadruple kickflip. Like, and I still haven't done it. It was 45 minutes well spent, because I learned how to do all sorts of other things while I was doing that.
So that is cool. No, I approve wholeheartedly of that. And I know what you mean when the artificial objectives that are set within the game suddenly fade away because you're too engaged with trying to accomplish the thing that you have set yourself to accomplish.
Yeah, so there's all that. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It sounds fantastic. And there's multiplayer as well to take on your friends. There's all sorts of achievements and leaderboards and all that social gubbins built in. A fourth course is along the way. It's coming along. It's going to be the I think it's called something like the Seaport or the something along those lines. I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Nice one.
Oh, and you can create your own deck if you want. So I've put pictures of all sorts of things in there, and I put a Pocket Gamer sticker on my on my skateboard and all that sort of stuff. The only criticism, like, I really have is that, you know, I would love to be able to hang out with friends and do it. Like, I would love to be able to play a proper multiplayer session. Like, one of the things, the podcast label that I run, one of my colleagues on it, a guy called Sam Turner, him and I used to just skate in Skate 2 and Skate 3. We used to just hang out and go skateboarding together. And
yeah,
it doesn't have that. And I would recommend it to him in, like, a heartbeat if it had it, because I would love to do that again. But unfortunately, it just doesn't quite have that, and it feels a little bit like it's lacking in that. But honestly, like, this is, you know, so good. It's one of my here you go, hands down. Like, the last 2 weeks I've played two of the games that are easily my contender for game of the year: Tearaway and Touch Grind Skate 2.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I'd like to play Tearaway. Not quite enough to buy a Vita. Although I see that at the moment, you can buy them for £99 in-game with this bundle.
I can't.
I need to get a PS4 and a whole manner of other things. And food and electricity.
No, you don't need it.
Yeah, you're right. That's just, who needs that stuff? All right, well, cool. I've heard nothing but good things, and I'm sure you're absolutely right. So, huge recommendation for Touch Grind Skate 2 right there. Which, as always, brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening. Go and find out all the information on the podcast story. Every story we talked about, it's all linked in there. Check it out. See the videos. Look at the sales. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, American listeners. The rest of us, we're just going about our daily business. We're just working and stuff. So, you know, I hope everyone had a nice work day. And is going to enjoy the weekend. Isn't that lovely? Yeah. See you later, guys. Bye.